Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here today. I'm actually the incumbent for House District 61. And even as the incumbent, I am facing my very first ever debate. So I will admit that I'm more comfortable talking with constituents about important issues and less experienced with debating issues. I love the Western Slope of Colorado. I've been a resident of the Western Slope since the late 1970s, when I made one of my first best decisions to move from Cleveland to the Rocky Mountains. And I've lived in either Eagle County or Summit County, where I currently live, since then. Like Senator Bennett, who we just heard from over lunch, my career path has been through education. I love teaching. I started as an elementary teacher and continued improving myself and taking classes and getting advanced degrees until I was offered the position of superintendent of schools, the position that I had before I agreed to step up into the vacancy for current House District 56. So I've served as a legislator for the past 2 years in the House of Representatives, and I've been honored to serve in that capacity. It's a job that I take very seriously, and I want to do the best I possibly can for the residents of the Western Slope. We need to stick together to represent Western Slope interests, and I pride myself in even serving in the minority party. I work collaboratively with all of my colleagues, using all the skills that I taught my students when I was a teacher about getting along with each other, forming positive relationships, and collaborating. To that end, I am very pleased to share with you some of the legislation that I successfully led over the last 2 years that relate to and reflect Western Slope values and interests. Legislation that improves traffic and conditions on Interstate 70, legislation that improves the ability for teachers to get jobs and renew their teaching licenses, legislation that improves literacy for all kindergarten, first and second and third grade students throughout Colorado. I have worked very hard to transition from educator to legislator, formerly focusing on the three R's of reading, writing, and arithmetic, to what I call the three E's: the economy, education, and our environment. I hope that I have your support to continue in this position so that I can continue focusing on important legislation that supports these Western Slope values, one of which is water. And one thing I'll share with you, every time I head back home from Denver, I make sure I fill up my water bottle to bring that water back home where it belongs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamner. Ms. Curry.
Thank you, and thank you, Club 20, for giving me the opportunity to be here today. Full disclosure, there are actually 5 candidates in this race. I don't know if there are any other races statewide where we've got that kind of a choice, but in fact, there are 2 other candidates that aren't here today. So our voters really have the opportunity in House District 61 to vote for someone instead of against an ideology or against somebody. They have options. And there's something happening, I think, in Colorado. What does this mean that we have 5 different folks vying for this seat? I think it illustrates a bigger picture issue, and I call it the disconnect between the voters and the two-party system that currently runs our state and our country. And I'm not just making an idle statement here. I'll give you some statistics that are quite interesting. In the last 2 months, the registrations in House District 61 have grown by 1,585 new people that went into their county clerk's offices and registered to vote. Of those 1,585 people, 1,011 were unaffiliated. Now, I don't really know what that means exactly. I wish I had a clearer idea of what the voters are trying to tell us about. All I can say is that they're not happy with the current situation, and they would like to see us try to do better. So the question is, given that they have a choice in this race, I threw my hat in the ring. We have a significantly reconstructed district. It's still a fantastic district to campaign in, and I'm connecting well with the voters. But I'm asking them to support me for a couple of reasons. I have experience in the State House. I served for 6 years, 5 of those years in a party and 1 year as an independent. I've got a proven track record, and sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not so good, but I do have a record people can look at. I've taken on the tough issues in our state, and I have a proven pattern of working with both sides. I wish there weren't two sides, frankly. There should just be one goal here, one allegiance, and that should be to the voters. That's the other reason I'm asking people to support me, is that I have a clear-cut line to the voters. There are no strings attached for me. When I get to the State House, they will be my top priority. And I understand that this is kind of new territory that we're exploring here. But I think that one thing I can say is that the voters are asking for us to do things better, and I offer that alternative for this district.
Thank you, Ms. Curry. Ms. Irvine.
I'm Deborah Irvine. Some people say Irvine, but that's fine. As long as you vote for me, I really don't care. I'm Deborah Irvine, Republican candidate for State Representative, House District 61. I'd like to recognize my husband, Rob. We've been married 21 years. We have a combined family of 5 children and 6 grandchildren. Believe me, I know what it's like to work with people. I'm running for office because I want to serve my district and our great state. I know that you probably assumed it's because of all the wonderful and flattering mailers that opponents send out, but I really do want to work and be of service. I come from a family of service. My son, Byron, is an Air Force captain and graduate of the Air Force Academy. My mother was recognized in 2008 nationally for the work that she does at Walter Reed Bethesda Medical Center with wounded soldiers. And my dad was in the Army for 30 years. I was the 2010 Republican candidate for House District 56. We received just shy of 43% of the vote. The winner resigned, and our current representative was appointed. I ran then and now because I want to be a sincere proponent of Colorado industries and for hardworking families. If we grow business, we will grow jobs. I am very proud that this week we received the endorsement from the National Federation of Independent Business. We must create an environment that encourages entrepreneurship and helps existing businesses reinvest, and we can do that by reducing harmful regulations, restrictions, and taxes. If we provide our children with quality education, they will have quality life. They need choices and challenge to pursue their dreams. We can also have the opportunity to create the needed skilled workforce with vocation and technical education. By pursuing domestic energy, we can help take the United States off its dependency on foreign oil. We have the energy resources in Colorado to be a leader while remaining stewards of our environment. My work experience, life experiences, and education make me a well-qualified candidate to represent the unique characteristics of Summit Lake, Pitkin, Eagle. Gunnison, and Delta counties. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Irvine. We now move to the question portion of the debate from our distinguished panel of questioners, Ricky Santarelli from Gunnison County, Kathy Welt from Delta County. Our first question will be directed to Ms. Hamner, and it will come from Ricky Santarelli.
Increasing popularity of recreational floating has caused increasing conflict between landowners and floaters. In your opinion, does the legislature have a role in reducing or ending that conflict? And if so, what is that role?
Thank you. I'm not sure I could hear the question. Is it the conflict between recreation and voters?
Recreational floaters, rafts, canoes, kayaks, people floating on streams, and landowners over whom that own the land that those streams flow across.
Thank you so much for the clarification. I think in previous years that issue was called the right to float. Am I on the right track with the issue that, okay. Actually, I think the issue becomes one not so much of water right of way as it does to property, private property ownership. And when I think about that, I mean, you think that boats should be able to float down the rivers because the rivers should belong to all of us, but people own property on the shores of those rivers. This is an example where perhaps legislation isn't really needed to solve the problem, but it really just takes people coming together to collaborate to solve problems together.
Same question, Ms. Curry.
Mr. Moderator, do we have a minute to answer? I don't know if I can do this in a minute.
Please try.
Okay, so I took the lead on this issue a couple of years ago, and it was a really tough challenge. The question specifically, though, was what is the legislature's role in terms of resolving this? And, you know, having been down that road, and I think it was the second time an attempt was made to clarify the situation in Colorado, we don't actually, we're the only state in the nation where this is an uncertain scenario. I would say that it needs to hit the courts first, and then guess what? It'll come back to the legislature because the statutes aren't clear on where the relative position of the two property rights. So we have a short-term resolution that is going to expire in September of 2013. I expect the issue will come back, and I expect that we could see a ballot initiative as well.
Ms. Irvin.
I don't really understand why this bill was even introduced. We have a tradition in our state of private property ownership, and I think that needs to be respected. At the same time, if there is a conflict, and in this case there was the understanding that there was an obstacle and rafters had to get out and go around on the property. This bill, however, forced it created an environment where someone could get out and go on the private property without even asking permission. And that violates some of our greatest traditions in Colorado to have, and we don't need a bill for that. Consequently, what we've done, or what was done, was that the two parties got together, and I guess it expires next year. At that point, I think they can continue it, and it should be a local matter. It can be between them, because if not, we are opening up a can of worms that I don't think we can ever scoop back in to the can.
Our next question will come from Kathy Welt, and it'll be directed to Kathleen Curry first.
As is in one of Club 20's policies from the last few years, the statement, Western Colorado is blessed with a number of abundant energy mineral resources, including what has been termed super compliant coal. Coal in the North Fork Valley that is very low in sulfur, little to no mercury, and whose main market are older power plants that don't have the technologies in place, perhaps, to clean those things. They don't need them with our wonderful, super-compliant Colorado coal. Then comes House Bill 1365, the Clean Air, Clean Jobs Act. Question, what proposals do you have to help save the coal mining industry that is now being affected by these older plants being closed? More specifically, would you sponsor repeal of House Bill 1365 to stop the dismantling of the Front Range power plants? Hopefully, then generating to the copycat states to the east the idea that that's not needed. Or would you sponsor legislation to require an appointment of independent review panel on what happened with the PUC?
So 1365, I'm very familiar with, voted against it, spoke out against it, passed anyway, had an impact on the coal industry in my district, a tangible impact on jobs and on production. However, my understanding is that the state action isn't the only player in the game, that the process for expanding both the Oxbow production and your mine at Arch, the West Elk mine, I think there's a big federal component there that the state legislature can't control completely. But my understanding is that the way to help the industry would be to get out of the way of what they're trying to do in terms of developing new deposits. I imagine that there's probably a transportation component as well that I'm not as familiar with. No, I wouldn't guarantee right now that I'd go after a repeal if steps have already been taken to comply. I would take my direction from the industry, however, if that is what they wanted to seek.
Ms. Irvin.
This is one of those situations where you're a state representative for a specific district. And I would consider looking at a repeal and hearing what there is to say. Unfortunately, at the same time, the rest of the state of Colorado has needs as well. The mining industry in our district represents almost 1,400 people, and a lot of revenue goes into the communities, a lot of revenue. And that would be an important factor. Would I consider it? I would consider it. I would have to hear what else has to be said about it, because then it does impact the rest of Colorado. That said, if anyone heard the Obama speech the other day, he was an advocate for clean coal, much to my surprise. I always felt that way. But I think we need to continue, and the biggest impact is our district and what the needs of our district are. So it is complicated.
Ms. Hamner?
Thank you very much. And I think there's a really unique synergy between coal mining in Delta County and the environmental concerns and interest in Delta County for recreation and agriculture. I would not support repealing House Bill 1365. I think it's an example of how we tend to get polarized between environmental issues and coal and mining issues. I would work hard to find more common sense solutions for the middle ground. I think we need to make sure that government isn't getting in the way of energy production like coal mining. I think there's a strong market for our coal mining. Our coal is the cleanest in the country that leaves Delta County, and there's a solid market for that coal. But I think we also need to be responsible in our development of our natural resources in a way that protects our water quality and our air. We need coal, we need oil, we need gas, we need solar, we need a variety of energy sources in Colorado.
Thank you, Ms. Hamner. Our final question from the panel will come from Ricky Santarelli, and it'll be directed to Ms. Irvin first.
Reports developed through the University of Denver Strategic Issues Panel indicate that Colorado's budget issues are so dire that we cannot grow our way out of them, and that we will face increasing budget shortfalls, regardless of what happens to the economy. What proposal would you suggest as a means of solving Colorado's budget problems?
You're asking what we can do to... I couldn't hear you very well, only because it was a little muffled, but what we can do for to handle the budget and the increasing expenses that we have. I know it sounds like it may sound a little hokey to say jobs, 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 but we are. We're in a situation where we have businesses that are regulated to the point where other people are not having and providing services. I mean, that needs to be changed. We do need to work on the structure that we have to make it more productive, to make it easier for businesses to grow. And all we have to do is look at other states. We look at states like Texas, we look at North Dakota, we work on our energy resources, including coal. We work on our energy resources, and we can create an environment where we can grow business. I've met several people, and one individual was telling me that they no longer provide a service because the EPA has regulated their business to the degree that it would cost them $20,000 to provide this service. I mean, that's something that we need to look very seriously at, so that we can provide an environment for enterprise to grow.
Ms. Hamner.
Yes, thank you. It's a great question. It's on the mind of many Coloradans right now. I think that we need to boost the economy in Colorado so that the state budget has a natural increase in revenue. And one of the main ways I think we do that is by investing in education, so that when our kids graduate from high school, they're ready to get a good job or continue their education. I think we need to, especially in House District 61 with all of the ski resorts, we need to continue to invest in tourism. Tourism is a fantastic revenue source for House District 61. It will help boost the economy and will allow us to regenerate money back into the budget for important services like public education, like wildfire prevention and wildfire fighting, so that we can continue to put in the budget the things that are most important to the people. And, you know, one thing I'd mention about a couple other thoughts quickly. One is that I think we need to continue to look at government efficiency. If there are inefficiencies going on, we need to figure out what they are and put those into the budget where we want to spend the money.
Same question, Ms. Curry.
Thank you, and good question. It took me about 4 years to figure out the state budget to the point where I could answer this really intelligently. And About 75% of the general fund is on autopilot anyway, and we don't have that much discretion in the Capitol building. We're working just like what you heard from Senator Bennett, with about 25%, some people even say less, that is discretionary. So the legislature, though, needs to focus on what it has control over. And I don't think it's the legislature's job to be in the job to produce work for people. I think there's a couple things that we need to do down there. Try to enhance the environment for the private sector. Try to do a good job, like Representative Hamner said, on the dollars we are spending, ensure that they're accountable and efficient. And then lastly, I think the legislature could take a leadership role on a comprehensive fix with regard to the constitutional conflicts we face. In particular, the Gallagher Amendment needs some work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Curry, and thank you to our panel for your excellent questions. We'll now move to the cross-examination portion of the debate. Each candidate will control 3 minutes, and based on the drawing we did, the candidate to go first for this period will be Ms. Hamner.
Thank you. My first question is for Deborah. Earlier today, we heard the thoughts from the governor's task force, TBD, about the need to invest in early childhood education. Currently, there is a huge waiting list for children to get into the Colorado preschool program, and I wondered what your thoughts would be to increase access for early childhood education to position children for success in kindergarten.
Childhood education, of course, is extremely important. And I also think that we should provide an environment where parents get involved with the teachers and provide that kind of a nurturing environment. You've been a legislator for 2 years, but you were in the education industry and educating our children for such a long time. I was just wondering what thoughts you had to make improvements.
Well, I'll move on to my second question for Kathleen Curry, because you can save that for your questioning time. But for Kathleen Curry, first of all, I want to thank you for your previous service in the House of Representatives. But because of your previous term, you are term limited, and I just wanted to mention the fact that if you are elected, you will only be able to serve for one term, which is 2 years. And then the second question, because you're running as an unaffiliated candidate, you wouldn't be able to assume a leadership role in either party. So I just wondered how you respond to concerns about your candidacy.
Thank you, and thanks for that question, Representative Hamner. Let's see, it was in two parts. The first was, I have a couple of responses
term
to
term limits and leadership.
Got it. Okay. So the one term, well, I guess we're all subject to one term, really, that truthfully the voters have the option of changing it up every 2 years. So I don't think any of us have a guarantee that it could be more than one term in a row. The advantage there being that I have this experience and can hit the ground running and don't have to work my way up a learning curve, so I feel like I can do a good job for the district because of that. But on the effectiveness piece, she's right, I wouldn't get a leadership position. But what I can do is what we've been talking about all morning, and that's to bring the two sides together to move us forward. As an independent, I have great respect for both sides, and find myself in a better situation representing a district that's 37% independent, serving in this capacity. Frankly, there's a voter accountability piece too, Representative Hamner. When you run good legislation, quality legislation, and you're willing to work with both sides to try to move forward and find solutions, I found that there was a core contingent of folks in the General Assembly that would support those kinds of bills.
The next three-minute slot will be controlled by Ms. Curry.
Okay. All righty. I have a question for Representative Hamner first. Last year, there was a really neat bill that involved recovering methane from, and I think it was naturally occurring methane releases to the atmosphere. It was a priority for the coal industry, I know, on the North Fork of the Gunnison, and there were lots of other folks that had joined together, too, to support that concept. And I checked the journal, and I noticed that you were no vote on that bill. And now, with Delta being part of the district, I would like to know how you feel about that if that bill came back.
Thank you. And it's a fair question. I appreciate that. First of all, I think capturing coal methane is a fabulous idea. What happened is the way the bill was presented, it compromised the environmental concern for reaching our renewable energy standard by 2020. And so it polarized the environmental groups versus the coal industry, which is where I think is a wrong place for us to be. So I hope that the bill does come forward next year. It kind of got in the calendar late. And I think if we, Senator Schwartz was working on some amendments that I think could have been amenable to both sides of that issue. I hope to be involved with her in the next legislative session to find that compromise.
Next session, when I'm working with Senator Schwartz on that, I hope that the leadership in the Senate doesn't pocket the bill this time because it didn't get a vote. Deborah, if I could ask you this, I'm going to set the context. Party versus district. This is, and we all know this is a really diverse district. There are folks, especially on the North Fork and elsewhere, that want to see more regulation with regard to gas production. Gunnison County and Delta County come to mind. Not everyone, but there is a strong movement to even set aside lands and to regulate it more strictly. How would you approach that, should that come forward, if you were serving in the General Assembly? Given that your party, some people in your party have a different opinion, I'd just like to know how you would handle that.
I don't understand the concept of party versus district, so I have a particular view on where I like to see things go, and that is we need to promote domestic energy for national security reasons and for economic reasons. At this point, Colorado has extremely stringent rules in place. There are 6,000 pits that have been studied, and there hasn't been any groundwater pollution at this time. I don't think there ever will. We have a lot of, so I'm not really sure. So, you say we don't want to be party-oriented, yet you're saying that there is a party
now,
district.
My specific
conflict.
Question, then, take it that way, is if you have people in your district that want you to, I have to stop.
Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three-minute slot will be controlled by Ms. Irvin.
This is for Representative Hamner. It's not painful. Energy independence is an economic and national security plus for our country. Coal, oil, and gas creates good-paying jobs and great revenue for our economy. You look at North Dakota, you don't have to look very far to see where it goes. Colorado has some of the most comprehensive and rigorous rules in the country. And a couple of months ago, not even that long ago, you publicly announced that you were not in favor of fracking. And I was wondering why, even though even the governor approves of the technology, and I think we just heard somebody else say that as well.
Thank you. The issue of fracking is one that's relatively new to me in this House district, and my opinions on it have somewhat been naive at the beginning and are more informed now. I would say my statement about fracking was coming from concerns that I was hearing from my constituents who are not convinced that the fracking procedures being used currently are not having a significant impact on their air and water quality. So I think that a solution moving forward is to figure out who's right. Is fracking completely free of any kind of environmental hazard, or is there some kind of risk to the public for it?
With the scientific research that we have showing that at this time there is no groundwater pollution, are you still against it?
I think that the constituents I represent are not convinced that there is no threat to their groundwater, especially our organic farmers in eastern Delta County. They're very concerned, and especially the distance of fracking operations and the proximity to schools, I think, is also an issue. So it's I think that we, again, need to work together to figure out where that middle ground is and have common sense solutions for Colorado.
So if it's environmentally unsafe or safe, where's the middle ground?
I think that we need more information about that to see.
How long would that take?
I don't know. I think we need a research. I think Colorado State University is interested in conducting some research about that. Because I think the constituents need to be reassured on the matter.
Kathleen, House Bill 1188. which you sponsored, would have sold property rights down the river by constituting a statutory right to trespass on private property. The bill would have granted commercial river outfitters the right to enter private property without first getting the permission of the landowner. It was clear proponents were supportive of expanding it even to the point of all types of boaters and fishermen. The Colorado Farm Bureau, ranchers and property owners, which you are also one.
And I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Your time is up.
Oh.
We need to move to our closing remarks section of this debate. Our candidate that will be going first for that is Ms. Hamner.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Club 20, for the work that you do for the Western Slope and for setting up this forum today. I want to reiterate that I love Colorado, I love the Western Slope, and I'm the best person on this stage to represent the Western Slope interests for House District 61. I have been and I will continue to be a collaborative, bipartisan legislator who works for common sense solutions that represent the interests of the people who live in House District 61. Protecting forest health in our watersheds means stronger local mountain communities. As a state representative for some of you in the room in House District 61, I am fully committed to stronger communities and a better investment in public education, early childhood through higher education. I look forward to sponsoring more legislation that helps us protect our forests and deal with the bark beetle epidemic. I plan on representing everyone in House District 61, regardless of their political affiliation. A strong tourism economy, high-quality education, that's my promise to House District 61.
Ms. Curry.
Thank you, and it wasn't rigged that I was in the middle each time. When we drew, I just kept getting the two. So this was a good discussion, informative for the voters. I think that's what's great about these debates, and I appreciate the chance to be here. So House District 61 is not the only district where the voters have a choice. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew there are three independents running this year. I think it's only a matter of time before you see even more independents stepping up to try to serve the public. Now, collectively, we have some common ground, and this is a big picture closing, so bear with me. But I think that the three of us believe that the system we have isn't going to fix itself. That's contrary to human nature and, frankly, just not realistic. It's not getting any better. And secondly, we believe that when the Colorado General Assembly convenes in January, we want to put the citizens' welfare first, not the welfare of the parties, and we are committed to trying to make the system work better for everyone. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Curry. Ms. Irvine.
Contrary to Ms. Curry's beliefs, there is no unaffiliated party. People are unaffiliated, but they do have beliefs that they feel strongly about. My opponents have experience in the legislature that I don't have yet. They also have a voting record, and that shows that I have two opponents who would do not and have not worked hard to keep more of your hard-earned tax dollars in your pockets. I believe in fiscal responsibility and in helping create a pro-business, pro-quality education, pro-domestic energy Colorado. I will be passionate about our issues, I will be compassionate about your needs, and I will work hard to create a stronger, more productive, and stable district for our next generations. Thank you very much.
That concludes our debate. Please join me in giving the candidates a hand.